But I thought I'd just for a minute kind of review what happened in the election, but also give you some prayer targets for the future. This is what the election looks like so far. This comes from The Economist. The data for Alaska and Mississippi, Maine and Massachusetts aren't quite there. I can fill this in by looking at the 2012 election to tell you that Alaska is mostly red, Mississippi, I think, completely red, and Maine and Massachusetts are mostly blue, or in a few cases. This is, I think, kind of interesting because it shows you the level of intensity. The darker the red, the greater the percentage of victory. The lighter the red, the lower. Same thing with the blue. The darker the blue, the greater the margin of victory. And so it shows you also the sense of intensity there, but it also breaks it down by county. Isn't that kind of intriguing when you look at that? And of course, you recognize that it's a little closer election in terms of those particular issues, but nevertheless, I thought it would be just the map that we have at the moment. You can go to The Economist. In a few days, we'll have a final map, and I'll put that one up if anybody's interested. And just gives you a little bit of a sense that even though there were many people that were convincing it was going to be a landslide for Hillary Clinton, didn't quite turn out that way. A lot of people have said, well, why did that take place in such a way that nobody saw coming? And there are lots you can talk about, but this piece by Todd Starnes was talking about the values vote. He called it turns out values trump everything. When you look at some of the exit polls, that people are really concerned about some of the values that Pastor Graham has already mentioned, whether it's sanctity of life or marriage or religious liberty or a variety of other issues, were very significant. When we look at the vote, there was a statistic that came out just a few days ago that said that 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. Now, the word evangelical is almost meaningless anymore, but that's kind of the slot that the secular press puts you in if you're not Catholic, Jewish, or mainstream, you know, kind of mainline Protestant. But in just a few days, we're going to have George Barna, who's looked at this in terms of the born-again vote. But I think it will demonstrate this. And the other way to look at it is that the number of individuals that did not vote for Hillary Clinton. And the statistic 6% is a good way to understand that. It turns out to be 666. That is, if you look at the African-American vote, she received a little more than 6% less in a percentage than Barack Obama did 4 years before. If you look at the Hispanic-American vote, again, her percentage among Hispanic Americans was 6% less than it was for Barack Obama 4 years before. And if you look at the millennial vote, at least those 18 to 29, again, it was about 6%. So it's kind of an easy way to remember that for those of us talking about this every day. You know, 6%, 6%, 6% gives you a little bit of better of an understanding. You may have noticed there's a little controversy going on, so I will not ignore that and address that issue. What about the issue of the popular vote? The argument being made right now is that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote but lost the electoral vote. Well, there is a lot of evidence to suggest that she may, when all the votes are finally in, will have won the votes that were counted but not the votes that were cast. And the reason to understand that is that if you are in a state where the percentage is close, then they will go and count all the absentee ballots and the military ballots and all of the rest. But in many of those cases, as you just saw, those various states were either really red or really blue. There's no need to do so. So it means we probably won't count the military ballots, which could mean that a higher percentage, matter of fact, traditionally about 2/3 of military tend to vote for the Republican over the Democrat. The other absentee ballots would be students and all the rest. So it may be true when all the votes are counted that she will have received more of the votes that were counted. But again, that's something to keep in mind in terms of people saying, well, that's why we need to get rid of the Electoral College. The Electoral College vote will, of course, not take place till December 19th. That is where, in this particular case, in the state of Texas, you have the 38 electors that will go to Austin and they will cast their vote. Which, of course, brings me to a question you see on the screen. Will any electors change the vote? I don't think so, but it is possible. It has happened in the past. There was an individual that voted for George Wallace instead of Richard Nixon. There is already one elector in the state of Washington that has said that he will not vote for Hillary Clinton, so she may not get all of the electoral votes from Washington. And this is why some people said, well, what happens if the red states move? And what I have here is something I got from Candy Noble. Candy Noble is a member of this church, and she is one of those electors from my congressional district. She is going going to go down to Austin on December 19th and cast her electoral vote for Donald Trump, and then that will go to the House of Representatives in January. And she points out, you can see this later when you look at it on your screen, this is something that every elector signs. But again, you have to understand, most of them are not going to change their vote. These individuals go, first of all, to the precinct convention. They go to the senatorial convention. They go to the state convention. They're the ones that have walked precincts. They are very dedicated. They're not likely to change their vote. But I did talk with an elector from the 2000 election who said, yes, oh, I got all sorts of phone calls telling me that I should switch my vote from George W. Bush to Al Gore. It didn't happen then. Don't know that it will happen now. But nevertheless, you know, there is a move afoot to try to change this. And here I have a picture of the governor of California. California is now one of 11 states that have bound together in a covenant which says that if indeed their particular state actually went for the candidate who did not receive the popular vote, the electors that would be sent would be those who actually voted in the popular vote. So you have 11 states right now. It works out to be 170-plus electoral votes. They said if they got to 270 electoral votes, they would then implement this. And these tend to be mostly blue states. It's Vermont, it is New Jersey, it is New York, it is California, it's a number of others. So there is a sense in which if this continues out, since there are now seven other states where this has been passed in one house or the other, we may eventually end up with sort of a de facto popular election, which of course would mean that we would still be waiting, wouldn't we, because we haven't counted all those votes I just mentioned a minute ago. The framers were pretty smart about this idea, and of course if we do go to a popular vote, how many times do you think a presidential candidate would go to some of the places they went in the last couple of months? Nevada, Iowa, New Hampshire. Just think about how that would affect it. But nevertheless, that's one of those footnotes for history, which maybe will play out a little bit later. But because of some of the controversy, you may have noticed that there are a few protests. Have you noticed this lately? And this is another one of those prayer targets, because the protest last night in Dallas started downtown Dallas. Where did it end up? At First Baptist Church. Now think about that for just a minute. A real question as to whether or not there might eventually be protest in front of the church. You might know, as the pastor mentioned, that he is one of those individuals that is on what? The Evangelical Advisory Board. Are you ready for seeing protest outside of Prestonwood? Don't know that it would happen, but we already saw that Pastor Jeffers saw something outside of his church that I don't think he saw coming a couple of days ago. So it's, again, a very important prayer target. And one more prayer target, which Pastor Graham was referring to, but I thought I would go into that in a little bit more detail, and that is who will be in the cabinet and the administration. He called for us to pray for that. Well, a lot of that has been taking place behind the scenes. There was a Clinton transition team, which now is kind of defunct, and there was a Trump transition team, which was implemented weeks ago. Now, I knew some of the people on there, but until their names were made public, I didn't feel like I'd say their names. But since, as you can see now, we have that list, we know a little bit more about that. You may have seen even in the news the other day that it was reported that Chris Christie was asked to step down, and the person that now heads up the transition team is Mike Pence. If you look at who the vice chairmen are, one of those is Chris Christie, another one is Ben Carson. If you look at the transition team, you will see it is a list of the kind of people I've interviewed on my radio program for years. It is a really incredible kind of list. Whether you were talking about foreign policy, James Woolsey, whether you're talking about religious liberty, I guess we can now say this since his name is in the news, Ken Klikowski, who works with Kelly Shackelford at First Liberty, is the one evaluating all of those individuals. Let's try to think of some others. Of course, they're almost all talking about John Bolton now will be maybe Secretary of State. I'm trying to think of some others. I know a lot of these people. You would know their names. One that has worked with Concerned Women for America. You could just go down kind of this long list of individuals, many of whom we've interviewed. Michael Flynn, working on foreign policy. So just again, a lot of people that you might encourage your prayers for, because they're individuals that we've had a chance to get to know. So whereas the pastor talked about some of the change, looking at the transition team, if this trend continues, you have changes coming to America in some pretty significant ways. So, again, I hope that that would encourage you to just pray about the future of this country, pray about those individuals in those positions of leadership, and, again, the next president will appoint almost 4,400 people over the next 4 years. Not all at once. Many of those are instantaneous, like the cabinet and sub-cabinet. Others over time. But again, those individuals. And then almost another 3,000 on various boards and commissions. So by the time it's done, more than 7,000 individuals that will be appointed, obviously not by Donald Trump, but by people that he's put into place who will put them into place. And so that just gives you a little bit of an idea of what's coming. Does that help you? A lot of that you won't see in the news, so I figured we might cover it here in church.